Morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Anthony Lykus, and I am here today representing the appellant, Timothy White. I'll try and refrain from making any references to picnic tables. I think we might have heard enough of that today. This is a case of long-term marriage. The parties were married approximately 28 years. Both parties gainfully employed. In fact, the appellee makes over $200,000 a year. Throughout the marriage, the parties benefited from the generosity of Mr. White's father, who was employed with ConAgra. From about 1990, when they were married, till 2008, multiple gifts were received by the parties, deposited into joint accounts. That money was ultimately spent. We're not here today asking to recoup any of that. Our biggest issues are there's two accounts, a Waddell and Reed account and a Charles Schwab account, that both parties testified source of those funds were either gifted or inherited. We asked the district court that those be deemed non-marital. Both parties testified that no marital funds ever went into those accounts. No money. Money did come out of the Charles Schwab account occasionally, used for family expenses. Again, we're not here asking for that. We're asking that the balance remaining at the time of trial, which I believe was the court determined should be valued as of June of 2017, that those be awarded to Mr. White. What the court did was Judge Redosor found that $100,000 went into that Waddell and Reed account directly from an inheritance Mr. White received when his mother passed away. The court did give him that $100,000 back, but found that all the growth on that account was marital.
And the briefs characterize that growth by the amount over a period of time, and there doesn't appear to be any dispute between the parties about how much the account grew, correct?
Yeah, there's absolutely no dispute about what it started out and what it ended up at.
I haven't found any expert testimony characterizing that, but just a little simple, or maybe not so simple, but a mathematical calculation might show that that growth amounted to perhaps 15% compounded annually. Is that a fair characterization?
That's probably a fair characteristic.
And that's a pretty significant amount of growth, isn't it?
That is, but I think what's significant here is, especially with the Waddell and Reed account, that $100,000 went in. Mr. White's only decision was he decided which four mutual funds that $100,000 was going to go to. There were no transfers at any point.
We don't have anything in the record that would tell us what any benchmark growth over that period of time would be. In other words, we don't have any index or any Standard & Poor's, any Dow Jones. We have no context with which to measure that, do we?
We do not.
Well, we certainly know. I think it's probably within common knowledge that a bank certificate of deposit wouldn't have been anywhere close to that.
That's correct. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, that account practically, or it more than tripled during that time. But it was not due to any efforts made by Mr. White. I know
he selected the funds, didn't he?
He initially selected the funds, and he did nothing with it afterwards. And I think looking at the recent Court of Appeals case of Schnackle, very factually similar, where a wife inherited money.
You realize you're in the Supreme Court now.
I do understand that, Your Honor.
Okay.
But I think...
And that we shouldn't be talking too much about Schnackle because it's so recent it hasn't completed the process, has it?
And the only reason I'm mentioning it, Your Honor, is in these lines of cases since Stevens came out, that's the most factually similar to what we have here today. We're not dealing with a business. We're not dealing with anything like that. We're dealing with two investment accounts, and that was exactly the issue in Schnackle.
Fair to say that our case law, and that probably from around the country, is at the extremes it's easy to decide. If you have a fixed investment where there's no control, the prototypical example, the certificate of deposit that comes in is not changed, that appreciation is not due to marital efforts. At the other extreme, you have the the person engaged in a business enterprise that was premarital, and due to that person's activities during the marriage, that premarital enterprise prospers, that clearly is due to the active efforts. So far, so good?
Yeah.
And what do the cases tell us about in the middle, where you have these investing activities? What's the standard? What should our rule of law be looking like in that situation?
Well, and that's where we're in kind of the gray area, is when it's not one of those extremes where it's kind of difficult for us as practitioners, and I think there's some trial courts struggling out there with, you know, you don't have the situation in Stevens where it's a guy going to work every day, putting all his money into that business. Yeah, that's the easy case to figure out under what the state of the law is now. Very easy to figure that one out. I would argue under this case, for both the Waddell and Reed and the Schwab investment accounts, the amount of activity that Mr. White did was so minimal that I have a real hard time with the court finding that he was actively managing this account. And I think part of the problem is what Mr. White does for a living. He's a financial advisor. He helps manage other people's money. But when you look at the facts and the record on this case, he wasn't going in and making trades monthly or even yearly.
He was just really good at the beginning.
He had a good picker, so I wish I was that fortunate.
Does that make a difference? I mean, during the marriage, the non-marital property increases rather dramatically by the skill of the marital partner. Why shouldn't that appreciation be marital?
Well, I don't think that's what the law says right now. I think it focuses more on, were you actively managing it? Did you passively manage it? Just because he was fortunate enough to pick some funds that did very well.
So you're characterizing this as a matter of fortuity rather than skill.
Well, all due respect to Mr. White, I'm not sure he knew that he was going to turn $100,000 into, you know, $328,000, which is what I believe it was at the time of valuation by the court.
The burden of proof was on your client to establish the non-marital character, correct?
Correct.
How should someone go about doing that? What would you want us to articulate as the rule about how we're going to judge these situations?
Well, in these cases, I think the biggest thing is both of these accounts, and I don't want to go back too much, but throughout the course of the marriage, they basically blew through the gifts that they'd been given by Mr. White's father.
Now, and the Charles Schwab, I think I heard you earlier characterize as was totally non-marital, but is that a fair characterization of the record? Wasn't there some commingling of marital funds?
Well,
I
believe
Charles Schwab?
The court found that there was commingling. What happened was, during the course of the marriage, the Whites sold one house. Before that house sold and they collected the proceeds from it, they purchased another house. And I believe the record shows the agreement of the parties was $415,000 was going to come out of that Charles Schwab account to go towards the purchase of the second home, with the understanding when they sold the first home, money would go back in. That $415,000 didn't go back in. A portion of it did, $240,000. So, my argument is that's not...
Was the character of the Schwab somehow converted at that point? This is how they're financing house number two.
Yeah.
As a bridge, right?
Yes, and that's how we characterized it, basically a bridge loan until they sold that, got the cash on the first
house. Because you may or may not have any rebuttal time left, I want to ask you about... In the Charles Schwab account, there was some ConAgra stock that came in, was diminished over time, but even at the time of the measurement, the valuation date, there was still ConAgra stock in the Charles Schwab account, right?
That is correct.
And is there any argument, can there be any argument, or what would be your response to an argument that your opponent may make that somehow that was not traceable and directly traceable to the ConAgra stock that came in from the gifts?
Of course, I would strongly disagree with that because you have all the statements in the record that show each time Mr. White received a gift from, it started as the initial $4,900 was an inheritance from his mother. Then his father gave gifts over time. And it'll show all those ConAgras going in. And yeah, certainly anything remaining of that ConAgra, I can't understand how that would convert to being non-marital.
And the district court determined that the entire Charles Schwab was marital?
She did, yes.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Paul Schottkowski. I'm the attorney on behalf of the appellee, Ann White. And we are here today to discuss the court's conclusions on this dissolution matter that occurred. Her decision was December 18th of 2018. As the court is very familiar with, the standard of review is de novo, and it's to look at whether or not there was any problem with how Judge Rettelsdorf, in this case, decided these issues.
Could we talk for a second about where I left off with your opponent about the Charles Schwab account and the ConAgra stock that was still in the Charles Schwab account? What's your best argument that that was somehow marital?
Well, what happened? I mean, the records clearly show that in that Charles Schwab account, initially it started with ConAgra stock beginning in 2008.
And there was still ConAgra stock at the end?
I think there was, if you look, yes, there was. There was like 6,500 shares of ConAgra stock that was left. Beginning in 2008.
And the statements would show the amount of ConAgra stock never declined below that value, that number of shares, right?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
So
they would
so
have been depleted.
Under that, if there was always in the account, at least using your number, 6,500 shares of ConAgra stock, all of which came in as gifts, how's that part at least not non-marital?
Well, from a strict tracing standpoint, Your Honor, what you have during the course of 2008 through 2016, and there's an exhibit, I believe it's exhibit number 52, that shows how all of the dividends, how all of the growth, capital gains, interest that was earned on that account, all that came to the joint tax return. And they paid taxes on the joint tax return. And exhibit number 52 also shows that during that eight-year period, the appellee, Ann White, paid a disproportionate share of the tax obligation. She was not only paying taxes on her earnings, but she was also paying taxes on the income that was being derived from the dividends that were paid by the ConAgra stock, the capital gains on the ConAgra stock.
But all the dividends would have been determined, or were determined, to be marital.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But I'm not talking about the dividends or the growth. I'm talking about that kernel of the principal that was there and never diminished. It may have started bigger, got smaller, but that amount that was still there at the end, how is that marital?
All right. So I think it's more, that goes back to the court's findings from a totality of all the evidence.
So what essentially, to shortcut, you're saying in the overall scheme of things, not an abuse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, because I think the other, looking at the totality of the evidence as referred to by Judge Rettelsdorf in her order, by using all of the appellee's earnings to pay for the family expenses and only tapping into the Schwab account or the other joint investment accounts to pay the differences, that allowed that money to continue to accumulate and grow. And that was the party's understanding. That's what they had always done. They had always used their earnings to pay for the family expenses. And if they needed something, if they needed some additional money to fund, in one case they were funding a house, in one case they were buying a car, or if they are a little bit short, they would pull from those investment accounts. That was the understanding that they had. And by doing that, that allowed the 6,500 shares of ConAgra stock and all the other investments held in that pot to grow and to accumulate, because as the evidence reflected in the record, it was the understanding of the parties that that was their nest egg. That's what they had always done. The only thing that changed with respect to the Waddell and Reed account and the Schwab account that are at issue on appeal was that in 2008, the appellant, instead of putting that money in their joint account, he opened two different accounts. There was a discussion about that, and the discussion was that he did so because he was working with other colleagues at Smith Hayes and then later Waddell and Reed. He didn't want them to know that the family had come into a substantial amount of money via a gift or inheritance from his family.
Could we talk about the Waddell and Reed account for just a little bit?
Okay.
That, in some respects, seems to be the difficult conceptual matter in that you heard me discuss with your opponent the extremes of the easy cases at the opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
Where does this fit in, and what's the correct conceptual framework for these in the middle where we're talking about just how much effort is active management?
Yeah. Well, I think the court addressed that in Stanishek and in Kofel, and it talks about if the growth is due to market forces and it's not due to any direct, indirect efforts such as money management by one or both of the spouses, then it can be deemed non-marital. In this case, there was some discussion about Stevens.
Do you agree that roughly 15% compounded would reflect the 15% per annum on a compounded interest basis reflects the gain reflected in the Waddell and Reed?
Although I haven't done that specific calculation, but I believe that's right, because it grew during that time period. It started with $100,000 by the time of at least June 30th of 2017. It had grown to $328,000. That was more than, you know, doubled.
Right. If we're going to decide whether or not that's due to market forces or due to something else, how do we do that? Doesn't someone have to put in some evidence to tell us about what the market otherwise did during that period of time?
Well, I think, you know, to try to differentiate between what the market would have done, how much of that is attributable to marital or non-marital, I believe the burden of proof would be on the appellant. But in this case, in terms of the evidence that was presented to Judge Rettelsdorf, the money, the appellant is a professional financial advisor. He has an MBA. That's what he does. He managed their money in consultation with the appellee as well.
Do you disagree with the factual argument that this was an initial investment and this was not active trading? He just selected the mutual funds and they grew. That's
yes.
What happened.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree with that. It was not actively traded like the Schwab account. With this caveat, though, Mr. White, on multiple occasions, talked about this active portfolio management theory that he was putting his clients and their money into diversified funds. They'd done the research. This is what he does for a living. Like the Stevens case, where Mr. Stevens was running a construction company and he grew the construction company based on his experience and training, Mr. White, in this context, was growing the value of the party's nest egg, their investments, utilizing his education, his training and experience. And this modern portfolio theory is something he employed not only for his clients, but also for their nest egg money. He did that not only in the Waddell and Reed account, but also in the Schwab account. And I believe by doing that, by doing the research as part of his job, part of his career as a financial advisor, he was able to generate better returns than a normal person like me, who would go and pick my own funds to put my money in because I didn't know which ones were the best performers.
How do we, from this record, how do we know whether these just happened to be really good funds, whether it was fortuity, I think was the word that was used before, or it was skill? How does the record speak to that?
Oh, I think there's evidence showing exactly how much these funds grew from the time of the inheritance until the time of June 30th, 2017, in terms of...
Are you asking us to just recognize the growth, or are we obliged when we're not at either end of the spectrum to examine the growth as compared to, I'll just use a rough phrase, the market?
Well, I think just based on the evidence that's in the record for this case, it's utilizing the modern portfolio theory, and in terms of how much
initially.
Better... Initially, that's correct. And there are also decisions that are made in terms of don't move those funds out of, or don't move investments out of those funds because they are outperforming other comparable funds.
Well, that's less active than moving, but is it active?
I don't think it would qualify as under the term active, but I think it would be part of the investment analysis or part of the decision-making process with respect to that Waddell & Reed account. I believe I'm out of time. If you have any other questions for me?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have some time left?
No, Your Honor.
Nope, we're out of time. Thank you. You're excused. That concludes the call for today. Thank you.